I'll just do the standard doggone five count. All right, five, four, three. Hello there, everybody. My name is Michelle Perez. As always, I'm joined by Menagerie of Buddies. These are spirit buddies. I can't fucking believe I'm going to say this, but Jake, our solemn, absolute controller of all things working on it. Absent. We hope he's okay and is all good and whatnot. We haven't heard from the guy. And he is a spectral buddy, as is Ruben, a spectral buddy, working on it as a podcast, quite literally staffed with people doing multiple jobs and all manner of different types of work and whatnot. That said, tonight I'm also joined again by our hyper buddy, incredible buddy, Eliza Gager. How are you doing, Eliza?
I'm good. Thank you.
All right. That's good. That's good to know. And tonight we've never had an air quote special, but we very often have not had an opportunity to peek into a wholly different world of sort of independent creation. Our guest tonight is someone who I don't know if this is a new field necessarily, and she could probably flesh this out a bit, but our guest Sarah Hightower tonight is kind of someone from a relatively new field, a sort of self-taught anti-extremism researcher. I believe she's also done some level of de-rad or de-radicalization, as it's called, that has historically been the work of various NGOs or this or that, but the way it changes and shifts under people's feet changes so often that, like, Sarah's body of work kind of moves in tandem with those shifting sands. Sarah has appeared on podcasts like Worst Week Ever, and has basically been a constant font of knowledge as it relates to Shin. God, I have the phonetic spelling in front of me because I knew I was going to fucking botch this. Shinrikyo. Am I correct?
Shinrikyo, yeah.
As well as QAnon and basically any number of far right to far left in some instances of cultic activity, Christian identity. She currently, or should I say recently, has worked with Jake Hanrahan of Popular Front on Q Clearance, a program about QAnon, and sort of seeking the founders as well as looking into the past and founding of this strange techno cultic, I don't want to say death cult, but possibly death cult phenomena that is QAnon. Sarah, welcome to the show. How are you doing tonight?
Hi. I just kind of stumbled in here and I'm intimidating everyone. So I'm doing pretty good. How are y'all?
I'm all right. I'm like, I've been farting a lot. It's been very bad. Not like excessively, but like I feel like I have to change my diet around or like walk a lot more.
You know what's good for that is stuff called simithicone. It's over the counter. It'll just say like anti-gas on it or something. It's pretty good.
Duly noted.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, my eyeballs aren't falling out of my head. The plants aren't dying. There aren't cartoon stink lines coming off of my body, but it's just like like looking left and right, like, nope, still me, still doing this. Don't know why. But it's just been for like a day, so who can say? Eliza, how about you?
I have gastroparesis, so like the opposite. I don't fart enough. That's what the doctors tell me.
All right. God bless. That said, I kind of wanted to start tonight and sort of ask, like, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts in which you'd made appearances, but I kind of wanted to not immediately jump into your biggest body of knowledge, which in my mind has to be Ohm, but I kind of wanted to ask, like, in terms of, if you could think of a spot in which you started this sort of independent research, like what informed it? What was like your air quotes Batman Begins style moment?
I don't know. It's probably a violent racist dad, or like 9/11 rednecks saying you don't see any Buddhist terrorists, but like little baby weeb knew of like one Buddhist terrorist group because we read an anime magazine. So fuck y'all. Let me go shoplift, like the only book on Om Shinrikyo in the store, and I will come back tomorrow and I will argue with the teachers and everyone else because I give zero fucks.
God damn. Argue with them about 9/11?
About like, oh my God, okay. I was born and raised in Arkansas. So we're talking like tiny, tiny podunk rural Arkansas. And like, we all just sat and watched 9/11 happen, like in our little middle school classrooms, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, things got like really racist and really intense really fast. And you don't see any Buddhist terrorists, do you? It's like, fuck you, actually. Yeah, you do. Anyone can become a terrorist. We just had someone like kill like 170 people like right next door a few years ago. Did we already forget this? He was not Muslim. What are we doing here? But I don't know. Whatever.
I mean, yeah. 9/11. Good Lord. I think if there was air quotes, this generation's defining moment, or maybe I should say millennials specifically, that's got to be it, man. Like, I remember my father talking about how everyone had sort of spoke about the various riots of the 60s and like MLK's assassination as massive formative moments that would inform like small things like arguments. But then, yeah, like being pissed off and even just having arguments consistently enough could definitely lead you down a path where, yeah, no. What you're saying is bullshit. I'm going to fix myself to this poll, as it were. So, I mean, was that like it? Sort of just sort of wanting to argue a specific point?
Well, yeah, because like it was pissing me off. Mm. Because like what we had just like seen on 9/11, it was the exact same shit that made McVeigh blow up the Murrah building. It was the exact same shit that made Ohm release sarin gas in his subway. Like, it's all the shades of the same shit. And like, you have these people, and I get it, we're kids, we're traumatized, and our parents are basically all mouth breathing racists because of where we are.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, I don't know, it was really upsetting. I didn't want to have to fucking hear like the, actually, I'm not going to repeat some of the stuff I heard immediately after 9/11. We all know it got really, really racist overnight, like dangerously racist.
Absolutely. So,
yeah,
absolutely.
Literally, like in the minutes following the attack, it was like immediately fucking racist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
just racist, like in tiny podunk Arkansas middle school. Like, it wasn't any less racist just because, like, we were kids.
Yeah. I mean, I was already in high school at that point, and because of my age, I was also in high school, literally in class, when Columbine happened. So that was sort of this little preview for me about, like, of course, we had no idea that, you know, 9/11 was going to occur. But when Columbine was happening, literally the next day, it was Marilyn Manson, Doom, goths and trench coats. And overnight, like, most of my friends were basically put under surveillance by the school administration. I was asked to go to the principal's office because I wrote a poem about something. So I had seen it happen like in a little tiny way, which of course has, it's not comparable to racism and Islamophobia, but I got to see that switch turn even a few years before. So I knew it was coming with 9/11 too. But I think that the reason that you and I have been mutual so long, Sarah, despite like not always seeing 100% eye to eye on every issue, is that you and I are both strongly motivated by telling people that they're fucking wrong. And that's one of the things I have really admired about your account is your, and just the career that I've seen you, the career of yours that I've seen so far is that you're really fucking on top of things in terms of history and historicity. And I admire that.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. I don't feel like I deserve much praise. it's like, what have I succeeded at? I'm not trying to get too deep right now, you know, because we're just starting off, but like, you saw me in the very beginning back in like 2018 when I first rolled up, because I was so like freaking out about like, you know, the QAnon stuff. So I was like, it's gonna turn into what we're seeing. And like, what did I do? Like, did we stop any of it? So I don't know. There's a very long list of things I have failed to even help prevent or even just move like the needle of public opinion.
Realistically, what do you think that you, one person, would be able to accomplish though? I mean, come on.
I know. Mm.
This is why I go to protests, Sarah, and do a bunch of shit that I'm not going to talk about on this, because I wasn't there and didn't do anything and didn't see anything. But yeah, I was there. So that is a situation where one person can make a little bit of a difference. But yeah,
not to take down this good energy or whatever. Jake, can you hear me, buddy?
Yes, sir. Thank you. I apologize. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. How's the cat? I was told there was a cat.
Oh, yeah, we can get him. Oh, he's eating. He's eating. He'll be in as soon as he's done. Yeah, no. I'm sure
he's good though, because we were worried there was an emergency.
Yeah, like
he's just on some meds right now. He's actually he's cool. The meds seem to be going well, and so he's like, yeah, he's fine. He just can't get tooth surgery until he's got this other thing problem fixed.
Absolutely.
Who amongst us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're just joining us, we were just kind of going through some stuff with Sarah.
Absolutely. If you've already done the intro, I can magically edit myself into the combo so that we don't have this section of me talking. It's all good.
No, we're fucking playing it as it lies, baby. That's golf.
That is golf.
That is golf's purest essence.
This is definitely we've learned a lot about golf this year, I gotta say.
God, yeah. I'd love to do some terrorism on a golf course, I tell you what.
I mean the only thing you really could do terrorism wise is like something that's airburst, given the size and circumference of a golf course, like, because just like one explosion on a golf course is just going to create like a really sick sand trap. And then you've just improved the golf course. So like,
they're very good locations for setting off fireworks at night, I will say this.
Ooh, or if you just had a horn like Jackass, and every time someone goes for a swing, it just becomes a Three Stooges routine. That's the best way in which to enact vengeance against the golf course would just be doing Bart Simpson shit.
That's true.
So in terms of that, so we sort of have a better idea like how you started. And obviously you feel some ways about it, like philosophically almost, because if you look at the current modern moment, everyone, for good or ill, has sort of tapped into a sort of conspiratorial mindset. Or maybe conspiratorial to certain extents. There are some taboos that are and are not broken for certain people, whether whether it's old hat like LaRoucheite stuff where the Jews are to blame for everything, secularism is to blame for all the ills of society, postmodernism, and if you get closer to the 9/11 era, actually Abrahamic faiths are the sort of blame and root cause for everything. Islam specifically was a big thread through a lot of sort of new atheist thinkers, like your Christopher Hitchens, your Mars, and basically anyone in the general orbit of like real time with Bill Maher / the earlier blogosphere that would sort of precede our online verticals that would eventually get wiped out by Facebook. And now we see everything on Facebook sort of being reflective of those old thoughts. And in many ways, I talked to Gretchen Felker Martin about this in the episode where we were talking about cultural criticism and media sort of melding into one. I kind of think of, I don't know how much you know about this, Sarah, but have you ever heard of the air quotes dark enlightenment or whatever? That bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I hear any sense of dismay in your voice, would you sort of talk about the broader overtures of culture and shit? Do you ever just get the feeling like those guys fucking won in some sort of way?
It can be assumed. Let me just make a note here because I think Sarah's too modest to say she fucking knows more about the internet than I do. So it can definitely be assumed going forward that she's not going to miss any references or terminology that we use.
Well, yeah, but I am also not a mind reader. To that end, like, I don't know. Is it too broad what I say? Perhaps they've won, or is it more like...
No, I mean, they're literally currently, I mean, you could say winning. Mm. I mean, they didn't really go away. I mean, you got, like, the Dark Enlightenment and the NRX bullshit. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, no, it's... they're still around. I wouldn't have to sit around and watch people like bitch about what like Peter Thiel feel constantly while I'm sitting here like looking at Nick Land's shit posts.
Mm-hmm.
If these guys hadn't, yeah, they're not losing, I don't think.
I mean,
it's not fun.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. I initially sort of caught wind of your work talking about Ulm and various sort of intersecting threads that sort of tie a certain strain of not just far right thought, but I kind of want to think of it in political terms as sort of a neoliberal political outcome. In listening to a lot of what you've spoken about with Shoko Ashihara, am I saying that right?
Yes.
Like the way he sort of rose to sort of create these or the cult Aum Shinrikyo is sort of one of the first times I've wrote like a vague outline in the notes, but basically the way it sort of started was there's this sort of thread in Japanese history and political history where, yeah, after being beaten in World War II, the United States basically ended the emperor stating he was God or the sun or whatever works for you. And sort of imposed that bit of political will. And throughout the world in the 60s and 80s, there were rising waves of spiritualism, sort of new wave shit, hippie shit, and the sort of self-help culture we see a lot in the West. If you want a sort of flag or whatever to point to in the here and the now, like Jordan Peterson, would be right at home in this sort of era. And that's kind of how this guy rose. He would basically go to a sort of yoga retreat of some kind in India, which those places are yoga practitioners are not monolithic, but if you're going to look for abuses, it's a hotbed for a lot of cultic shit and a lot of sex pest shit.
Yeah. There's also a crossover with like whatever you want to call the Western sort of, you know, white people that are really into mysticism from kind of Eastern culture fascination angle, or like I'm just thinking of like Ram Dass, the guru that died recently, like that, the white people that renamed themselves after Indian deities, for instance.
This is
That feels like close to where like they're not getting off into full cult territory, but that flirts with the same exact stuff that cults like would have.
Yeah, people want. They want folk religion, and the Protestantism that's dominant in the United States has sort of taken away that kind of incense and bells and images of saints sort of stuff that folk Catholicism used to be used to give sort of white Western dominant monoculture, and white Western dominant monoculture doesn't have that anymore. So I think that drives stuff like Gwyneth Paltrow. It drives wellness. It drives yoga and Orientalism, adoption of, you know, foreign religions that white people have absolutely no connection to. It really drives stuff like, oh, I took a DNA test and I'm 2% Cherokee on my mom's side, not really processing in the white liberal imagination what that actually means about what your ancestors were getting up to, and instead sort of helping yourself to what you think you are entitled to.
Now I can smudge.
Exactly. And there's also, I mean, even without claiming the fake Cherokee ancestry, there's the sort of entitlement to smudging and the entitlement to, oh, what do I do to cleanse my apartment, and just sort of helping yourself to the spiritual smorgasbord that you assume is going to work for you, which is weird. I talk to my Indigenous friends about this a lot because I'm a white settler, obviously, and it's always puzzled me, like, why do the Gwyneth Paltrow types think that Indigenous medicine is going to work for them? Like, really? Do you want to bring that into your settler home, this medicine that you spent, your ancestors spent hundreds of years trying to genocide? That's not going to work for you. You know, it's not going to work for you, even if you believe in it. So, I mean, I deal with that a lot in my career, just sort of the symbolism and stuff like that. But popular imagery, especially spiritual imagery and sort of folk access to ritual, has been completely erased from the majority of white American day-to-day living. So people are starving for it. So this is also why we have TV Tropes, the website TV Tropes, because critical analysis and close reading of literature has been completely taken out of public schooling. But people want to do that. They want vocabulary and a theoretical framework to talk about media with their friends and with people they know. That's just a human thing. We need to stretch our brains in that way. So if you take it away, if you take away the sort of academic or the religious, like the church itself, if you take that away from people, they'll come up with their own shit and they'll get it wherever they can. So cults do really well recruiting people that they know are hungry for that kind of framework to apply to their lives. It's fun. It's fun to fuck around with incense and bells and pictures of saints, you know?
To that end, what I was going to ask you, Sarah, was in terms of the modern moment, like, yeah, you talk about your sort of dismay vaguely. I think in the current moment right now, because I've heard you sort of talk about this as it relates to political phenomena as well as sort of people sort of seeking some sort of, I want to say, they're kind of trying to find God, or at least trying to make their own God, or feel like they have a hand in it. When I think about this, my first thoughts were to sort of, yeah, immediately tie it to the current political moment. But I also kind of am curious about this. Like, do you ever see reflections of this and sort of the way in which many experiences are becoming commodified or almost sort of like a fandom? Like, does that ever sort of enter your schema of thinking? Like,
constantly.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. like, because it's old hat to say like Gamergate preceded all of the modern moment of the right. But to that end, I think more generally consumer movements, like
consumer fan culture too.
Consumer fan
across,
culture.
Across genre, yeah. Not just like Marvel fans, just like the idea of having to be a fan of something is way higher up in the public consciousness than it has been in the past, I think.
Well, I will say as a mythology person, it is interesting that traditional white mythology and religion has been repackaged and is being sold back to white people in the form of Marvel movies. Like they're back in the Thor fandom like they were, 2000 years ago. But
absolutely, yeah.
It's
who even knows it's that capitalized Thor is a now. Norse god, right? Like,
yeah, I definitely believe that the tendency to get really air quotes militant, but it's like a fine line. People who act in the corporate interest sort of do, specifically with algorithms or whatever. Like Sarah, in terms of that, I was also sort of listening to you speak on soft selling their beliefs and systems of belief, sort of through otaku culture, through mangas, sci-fi magazines, and the like. In terms of permutations in the West, like say QAnon and various far-right strains of thinking that have a conspiratorial mindset, do you sort of see similar characteristics and stuff in the West? And if so, like, what's some stuff you've been seeing? What are the heaters? Where's the fire?
It's first I want to say though, Ohm's anime and manga production. It wasn't a soft sell. That's the thing. It was a hard pitch.
Ooh.
Oh yeah. No, they didn't hide like anything. It was like they weren't talking about like doing a POA, like going and killing other people and having it be a justifiable, religious homicide or whatever. But no, Asahara was Asahara. Asahara was God. Asahara had all of these different incarnations. And you go and you watch like the OVA series that they made. It takes place at Ohm Dojos with the Ohm logo, and it shows these people training and practicing just like they were like in real life. And it's have any of y'all ever watched like old Christian propaganda for kids, like old Christian cartoons?
Sort of like the claymation stuff.
Yeah, that era.
Davy and Goliath.
Yeah, definitely.
Hell yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's always a moral.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. So the morals, these little vignettes, they had morals too, but the morals were always like, Sonshi is always watching no matter where you are. Okay. And this means that he can see if you're slacking off, but it also means that if you're stuck in a snowstorm, he'll astral project and come on the radio and save you from death, or, he'll jump up out of his body. It's they're little morality plays, but no, it wasn't like a soft pitch. And they were produced not so much to appeal to like otaku culture. It was just because like Asahara and his nerds were otaku. Like he wanted to be in his own anime. And they thought that was the coolest shit, and they wanted to be in it too. And if you were in the inner circle, you got to be in the anime as yourself and do your own voice and shit, which like, if you're really into this stuff, like that's like the coolest goddamn thing. Oh, right.
Yeah. That's fucking nerdy in a very like classic nerdy way.
Mm-hmm. You find that a lot with cult leaders is that they use the cult for wish fulfillment and people are very happy to fulfill those wishes for them. Like,
but guys, there's, one of the older OVAs, there's this small little like transition segment where they've drawn Ohm as the OG Starship Enterprise.
Nice.
Oh my
and it
God.
Even says Ohm on it. And Asahara is the captain, but instead of like, you know, being in like, you know, like a Captain Kirk uniform or whatever, he's dressed like the old man captain from space battleship Yamato.
Right.
But he's wearing Mobile Suit Gundam white base colors. So, and it's like ultimate wish fulfillment.
Pure, yeah, pure weeb. Like,
yep. Yeah, no, he was, yeah. Just, like, just, they were a bunch of nerds, man. He recruited nerds because he was a nerd, but he was like a miserable nerd. And these were successful nerds.
In many ways, the narratives that I've seen basically in your threads, you almost sort of have an affection for them, but like, in many ways, the Ohm guys are a little bit Wolf of Wall Street and also a whole lot of like the righteous gemstones. There's machine guns, there's rocket launchers, there's helicopters and shit. But also on a sort of baseline level, while they may be very charismatic, like a lot of charismatic people are a little bit intellectual, but like also a lot bit dog shit stupid.
Mm-hmm. Okazaki, one of the terrorists who was executed during the mass executions, he was on trial and he was asked about Hideo Murai, and Hideo Murai was the mad scientist astrophysicist who was shanked by the Yakuza on TV, was assassinated on TV right after the sarin attack. And he famously said Hideo Murai had like an IQ of, I think he said IQ of 600 and an EQ of 0. So like the intelligence quotient was skyrocket, but the emotional quotient is like 0. He
oh my didn't God. Get it.
Same.
No, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Whomst among us?
I've always said if one of us were going to be assassinated on television after committing a terrorist attack, easily going to be Eliza. That 600 to 0 ratio. I'm sorry. That 600 to 0 sterilized.
Mine's more of a 420-69 split.
So. Oh.
That's what's up.
No, everyone who knows me, they know they're going to get the call someday. It's like, hey,
oh
is it Eliza? Yeah.
She went zero mode on them.
Yep.
but yeah, the individual figures that sort of comprise them, I think, like it's not just like left wing thinkers that sort of sit back and sort of look at this. Like I've seen a lot of, I would say, centrist, to air quotes, apolitical people that are quite queer or quite literally right wing, sort of are interested in this phenomenon. Like these are some of the people that, like, I could say beyond just simply media posturing, they're like kind of concerned about people's accessibility to enacting mass casualty events. There's, I don't want to be one of those. I believe that like all people can inherently be good. I will never believe that. I feel like the good people you meet in the world will be in the minority, unless they prove otherwise to you. But there's sort of a through line in humanity where like this place would have undone itself years ago in the Cold War, given the proliferation of nuclear missiles. And there's always three or four stories where, yeah, it was the story of one man saying no to pushing the big fucking red button. In terms of that, like, yeah, even a lot of these right wing people are like, yeah, I think maybe there's a line and it's Ohm shit. Do you see kind of in the last 5 years, because, you know, obviously there's all of the political phenomena, Trump onward, that has changed. I see this in a minority I inhabit, which is trans people, which is that like anti-trans sentiment in the media, et cetera, is on an upward arcing, it, you know, it's going to be like this for years. They, or rather not they, but the media establishment clearly likes sensationalism as it relates to trans people. They're not interested in painting a nuanced picture. They're the media. They like sensationalism. That's how you get asses in seats. Through other experiences, like, I guess, you know, political disenfranchisement of Black people, or whether it be bodily autonomy for cis women and certain gender nonconforming people and trans men, it feels as though people are kind of having a large scale reaction to public policy hewing towards a liberal or progressive agenda. And people are seeking traditionalism. They're seeking some pretty far out fucking ideas as it relates to traditional conservatism. And it's becoming more paleo conservative, like really backwards aggressive. Do you believe that, like, it's kind of a breeding ground for this sort of activity, or is it a little more complex than that?
No, it is kind of like a breeding ground for this sort of bullshit. Yeah. And I also think, unfortunately, we're past the reverting back to paleo conservative phase of all of this bullshit, because what Pat Buchanan was vomiting out in, like, as recently as 1996, mm-hmm. that, you know, pissed a lot of people off, and rightfully so. Like, today, that's mainstream. It doesn't piss people off like it did even back then. And man, it's not like Richard Spencer from, like, MPI, like that asshole. I mean, like, mm-hmm. One of his biggest fucking influences was Buchanan and paleo conservatism. That's just like classic conservatism now. And people are being, you said that they're finding, like, these weird places to go with, like, you know, I don't know, trad shit or whatever, but they're being shown fringe bullshit where they are congregating in these breeding grounds, whether they're digital, whether they're going to, like, actual book clubs, like, you can name it.
Mm-hmm.
You have people who were always kind of on that fringe beyond Buchanan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they're seeing all these young people, and they're pitching them shit like Evola.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're headed, which, I mean, you want to tie it all back to, oh, there you go. It's just a bunch of esoteric fucking bullshit cribbing off of, like, what? Theosophy? But then you got to make it some Nazi stuff, so it's like Aerosophy. It's not. I have concerns about the future, but I'm trying not to be too pessimistic on your show.
No, I cannot stress this enough. If ever there were a place for you to be pessimistic, it would be this place. I don't think that you come from a destructive impulse when you speak in pessimistic terms. Quite simply, to kind of think of this without doing the sort of, lash myself on the back so that I'm absolved of all guilt. I feel like I kind of talked with a friend about this before she left. She was visiting Missoula. She wanted to see if she would live here. I was kind of just talking about things, and, like, we were kind of talking about, like, a thing that you're not necessarily coming from the place of just working off of your old religious beliefs and just saying, well, I'm a sinner for I have sinned. But I do think that, like, I'm okay with the generalized concept of sin, because, like, to walk through life believing you've done no wrong. Like, I think our generation's probably biggest sin is that, we have concentration camps in America where a bunch of Mexican men, women, and children are piled in like cattle that probably have, like, chattel slavery style conditions forced upon them, caked in their own shit and unwashed bodies and coughing in each other's fucking faces. And like, during the Obama era, like 3 years prior to, like, the concentration camps as they are now, near the border, the border states, they would just find mass graves full of unidentified dead Mexicans. And no one gives a fuck because they're Mexican. And that's our fucking sin. You know, you can't let the sin paralyze you and make your life unlivable, but like, you didn't run into a hail of bullets or whatever to stop that or whatever. But, you know, how could one individual person do that? Yeah, no, don't fucking lash yourself. It's like,
I mean, America as a country loves looking the other way.
The human condition, Jake, loves looking the other way.
Perhaps.
It's not unique to us. We're the great Satan, man. But like,
as far as American individualism versus more communal, you know, types of societies, perhaps.
Okay. But I mean,
well, el problema es el capitalismo, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, right? Everyone wants to do something to help. It's the thing is that this desire to fix stuff and to not live in such a fucked up and exploitative way has been shunted into bullshit, fake solutions that help no one except, you know, what's the petition, like change.org? Yeah.
Change.org, so
people go to change.org and sign the petition to not imprison so many Mexicans, please. And they hit send and they're like, yeah, I did something today. Well, back to cartoons or, you know, whatever. I don't blame them for it. I'm not blaming the individual for that at all. It's just that, you know, the average 25-year-old has been told that that is a reasonable or relevant or impactful thing to do, or like just bare minimum. I see so much stuff about, hey, let's all buy this movie or listen to this album as a form of activism. And it's like, that's not fucking activism.
Yeah, it's all marketing.
Activism is getting tear gassed. Like, bare minimum, you need to be in the street or giving somebody money, or, you know, you need to actually like do stuff. Mm-hmm. And the accessibility of doing stuff has been intentionally alienated from the population. Mm-hmm. And it's been ghettoized, like literally. Mm-hmm. It's considered déclassé, it's considered outré, it's considered, you know,
in certain forms, at certain leftist thought circles, which is always hilarious because everyone that seems to be speaking on the behalf of the air quotes working class has never worked with their hands in their fucking life. Mm-mm. They've only existed in colleges. They're going to lecture me about the professional managerial class when they've never worked on a factory floor. They've never worked on a wet floor. They've never done jack shit. But actually, no, man, introducing protections for trans people and pro-trans sort of union activity, that's actually going to alienate the working class. Where if you actually know your history, getting pro-LGBT policy within the airlines from the sort of airline stewardess union meant that like they could actually use that as a way to get all of the airlines to participate in that scheme because it had to be universalized. I really, without getting conspiratorial, the rhetoric that you have to do populism that hews only to white thought, it's people that are taking right-wing money to basically kill the argument in its fucking cradle. Like, it's very effective to have multiple groups of different people on the same side working towards the same end.
The right wing decided they were going to utilize populism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they asked me like when I first rolled up and I just wanted to like fucking try to help with the QAnon stuff. Right. People on the left and especially goddamn libs, unless they were like, you know, sort of like the Antifa types who had experience, you know, with radicalized and racist assholes, and you know, the process of like unlearning racism and shit. Okay, the right ringers, they were asking me for help occasionally. They would trickle in every now and then. It's like, my mom has changed, she's dumb now, she just watches this. My friend, she came to me like, and she had free thinkers, her free thinking parents, who they didn't vote for Trump, but like they mainlined InfoWars and stuff. They had changed and they won't even open the door and speak to her now. Like, the alt-right live streamers, they were like, these people in my audience, they're trying to talk to me about, like, you know, this QAnon stuff. It's like fucking their families up and I don't know what to do. So I was like, okay, I will try. What I'm going to do is I'm going to try to get people over on the right side, on the right wing side and all this shit. I'm going to try to get them to try to maybe try to stand up and, you know, raise some hell and get their own side of the aisle to start giving a shit, because it's going to take my side of the aisle a little bit longer to catch up, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would require that Democrats actually fucking do something for once, which they is wouldn't. Completely contrary to their stated mission, which is to literally never do anything.
I ended up in a series of weird fucking, like, I didn't even know what I was getting into. And then before I know it, it's like, oh my God, like, I think these are like troll rooms where they just decide how they're going to like fuck with like social media stuff and like Jack Posobiec's people. And one of Jack Posobiec's guys asked me, he's like, what do you think about populism? I'm like, I think it fucking sucks and is dangerous. And he was like, well, Bernie's a populist. And I'm like, I think it fucking sucks and is dangerous.
And in Bernie's, like, and in Bernie, oh, one moment. And in Bernie's case, like, because he had deeply cynical people working with him, and also, you have to remember, populism means sanding off the edges and making the broadest possible messaging, which a complaint from leftists was that he was appealing to too many people and had people appealing to niche interests or whatever, which is contrary to the actual things Bernie did. And don't get me wrong, I like canvassed for the guy in shit. Like I canvassed for the Dems in, I did this during quarantine because it was a $20 an hour the fuck job during a pandemic's first throws. If I'm going to get, you know, if I'm going to risk life and limb, like living in the shithole I did at the time, it was incredible. I was making good money. But like, It was disheartening to see all of this criticism that was like rooted in overtures to a thing that didn't exist. Like the idea that introducing trans this or pro-black this or Black Lives Matter or defund the police or blah, 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 blah to Bernie shit. Like if you look at that versus shit he actually said, there's a disconnect. There's all of these rhetorical things people say to basically get quoted that have no anchoring or mooring in real fucking life. But yeah, no, I would agree with you in as much as like populism, like the history of it. When we think of Andrew Jackson and then like post Reconstruction, the South and the Democrats effectively abandoning the South, despite the fact that like, if you were to take away X amount of gerrymandering in southern states, you'd probably have yields of like voter bases that would probably have massive Dem support. But like the Dems don't want to fucking fight down there. But this is all affect at this point, Sarah. Like these are things we just say to one another or whatever to like sort of put out that we have this feeling about this in the world. But like, I mean, as you've seen also, just feeling some way about something doesn't lead to a policy outcome, and it doesn't like lead to real world change. Like specific action does, which is,
yeah, but they took specific actions to try to appeal to leftist populists. They like, they knew they were going to piss in the well. And it was like, I can't. When you realize that like, you're naive and stupid and like, okay, these, all right, they're just trying to use you to get to some journalists. Like they never really actually wanted to help the people out of QAnon.
No, no, it's about they access. Don't care. It's all the access game.
I just got so, I got like so, so angry. And I oh man.
No, no, I would say, you know, this is no smoke to anyone, but yeah, no, those people stopped fucking talking to you as regularly as you did when their people started eating shit. Because there was, again, there was the affect, there was how people felt about it, but that doesn't mean a fucking thing when you look at the outcomes. And that's one of the bad parts of people sort of thinking that, you know, if we try to recreate what Trump did, but on the left, like, we're going to have some big fucking success. We're going to have good outcomes for all of these people if we can tap into that energy.
Blue MAGA, I guess.
Yeah. Well, no, and the problem is, like, one, Bernie isn't behind that fucking message, so good luck with that. But not only like the current schema for them is to make the point that no, you should think of politicians as tools to give you the outcome you want. And then what a bunch of people that used to basically talk nonstop about left-wing positions, it would constantly rail against the intellectual dark web and Peter Thiel you mentioned earlier, Sarah, and like now all of those people are paid by Peter Thiel, like unimpeachably, like Glenn Greenwald, Matt Taibbi, all of these people are essentially either getting money from Peter Thiel directly or through someone that was a Thiel fellow, or in J.D. Vance's case, someone that worked at Planeteer or Palantir, some bullshit name after Lord. If a company has a Lord of the Rings name, it is tied to Peter Thiel. So it was written in the good book. And that book is Lord of the Rings trilogy, part two.
Well, I mean, I've just been thinking about what Eliza was saying, how people, it's inherent and not crazy for people to want to help, but which side of the aisle is better at it going after those people and appealing to those people, at giving them something to do? And unfortunately, it appears to be the ones that are out there like Alm, that are cultic, that are they for whatever reason seem a little more insightful into appealing to that base than any other. And
well, Jake,
there's a lot of easy answers for that.
Jake, Jake and Sarah, I want to ask you after this, but like what I would say to that, Jake, is like a lot of those fringe people, like they deal in belief. Belief puts asses in seats. Belief gets you your ass actually out of your seat and telling people about your belief. The ability of Marjorie Taylor Greene, Boebert, all of these QAnon freaks that either inhabit Congress or are moving up towards the Senate in the United States of America. These are people that basically started out, like Marjorie Taylor Greene was a car rant. She wasn't a MILF. I'm going to have some internalized transphobia that I can make as a joke, but I'm going to pull this card. Marjorie Taylor Greene, like, looks like a detransitioned trans woman that just does right-wing videos with, like, people to talk about the dangers of transitioning. Her head is fucking pear-shaped. I would constantly bitch about trans people if I looked like Marjorie Taylor Greene, because otherwise people are going to look at me and think, oh, my God, you're Marjorie Taylor Greene. You have to live like that. Fuck me. But like, yeah, these people sort of traffic in that because it actually doesn't just get reactionary tendencies. It gets participation.
Right.
In the era of the algorithm, like actually getting people out in the street is like an amazing outcome. That's when you're doing incredibly well and your outcomes aren't just monetary. You can shift policy.
Right.
You have people putting their feet in the street.
And that's what we're talking about, you know, with QAnon in America today, unfortunately. Yeah, like what you just described is starting impossible from that end.
But yeah, to that end, what I was going to ask you, Sarah, was like, in terms of the populist like strain of thought. I know you're not like some sort of poli-sci person or whatever, but like, in terms of how people think of D-Rad, you've also like had a lot of dismaying thoughts on de-radicalization uh-huh. itself. Mm-hmm. In terms of like trying to think of ways for people to maybe not attack outright, but to like sort of have an answer for these dumbfounding political, religious, cultic phenomena that like absolutely infest sort of our American political system. Like, if you had to think of a place to start, like, where would it be?
Accepting that sometimes there is no answer and working from there.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird. There is a power in that. I don't know. Stop me if I'm wrong, but like sometimes, like when I think of that, I grew up Catholic. When you said accepting like that there may not be an answer, my first thought was like the Catholic mystery of faith, right? Like there's not going to be any answers. But you know what? Don't sweat the small stuff. Maybe not that, maybe don't sweat the big overarching fucking things. That is God. That is Christ. Mm-hmm. Those are those wielding those forces of the universe that you're not going to be able to touch.
Yeah.
And then, ceding some of that power to the, to God, the universe, whatever you like to call it. And instead, yeah. I mean, that's not me calling your shit out. I think about this because I struggle with even wanting faith, because I look at all of the cultic activity we see right now, right, Sarah? It's on account of a leap of faith.
But like, it was always there. It's always been there. We're talking about like, well, with this new like cultic phenomenon we're seeing now, like with QAnon, they're getting asses out of the seats and into the streets for the politics. And I'm like, okay, so Jim Jones and the People's Temple.
That's what I wanted to ask, actually.
You want to talk about fucking taking folk religion absolutely. And repackaging it for fucking white people? Getting people absolutely. Into the fucking streets? Yeah, no, there is nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, a good point, a fair point. I was actually, I mean, not much of a segue, but do you have any opinion about Leo DiCaprio as Jim Jones?
I'm very angry.
Yeah.
And how long do you want me to rant?
Dude, again.
Dealer's choice,
go off,
you know?
Go off.
Because this is, no. And I don't mean it in like a hissing, flailing. You can't do that because it's insensitive and bad. I mean it like, not right now.
Not a good time for it.
Not right now. You fucking just take a fucking number. Fucking chill the fuck out. Like, this is not the time.
I can
this
see
is
that.
Not the time.
I can agree with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, we should touch on that because pandemic is extremely influential to this stuff and tends to accelerate a lot of these processes. And that's something that we see in history again and again. The religious and cultural changes that happened during the Black Death are happening again right now. Mm. We are seeing people, I mean, during the Black Death, people went so crazy with the religious stuff that literally they would get up out of their villages in a procession and walk from town to town flagellating themselves. People committed religious suicide. People did all sorts of just wild stuff, and religion and faith itself changed considerably. And we are seeing that happen again. And we're seeing a lot of the stuff that happened during the Black Death happen again. The unemployment, the Great Resignation, it's the peasants' revolt. That's what's happening right now. It's the peasants' revolt. We lost so many people during the Black Death that there was able to be a negotiation of labor afterwards. That's happening again. I haven't seen anybody talk about this. I'm the only one apparently who has done any research about, you know, pandemics prior to this ever happening. And actually during the Spanish flu, spiritualism, big jump in spiritualism, which again is like Ouija board, Madame Blavatsky stuff that we are seeing again. And on the left, the left's answer to this, to the drinking bleach and feeding it to your autistic kids and getting into like faith healing and stuff, it's fucking astrology. And Lana, Lana Polansky tried to warn people about this like 3 years ago, and she got dragged over the fucking coals. Oh, astrology is just fun. Why do you hate fun? Just let people enjoy things. It's fine. It's just a way of interpreting events in my life. It doesn't mean anything. She was fucking right. It is. I mean, Adorno wrote the Stars Down to Earth, I think it's called, specifically about fascism and astrology. And astrology itself is not explicitly left-wing, quite the opposite. It was used extensively by the Nazis, and the Nazis were very much into spiritualism, the stuff that we now see with the Gwyneth Paltrow set. And there's just this decision on the left to be like, no, it's fine. Sage smudging and crystals and tarot cards and astrology are not things that we need to actually be concerned about. And it's really fucking frustrating. I don't want to see, you know, horoscopes on my timeline from, you know, extreme leftists. It's not good. It's not good.
I mean,
I started noticing that, this is sort of aside, but just that people I knew were downloading apps specifically for astrology and for horoscopes. That's when I was like, oh, no.
Apps that send you push notifications on your phone, you know.
That's just, come on, folks. Come on. You're smarter than that, I would hope.
It's not fucking good. Yeah. It's really bad.
In terms of just like, maybe philosophical pushback, I would say, I believe maybe in terms of online tendencies and sort of being like an annoying thread or an annoying sort of articulation of the affect, like the astrology people or whatever, that leftist tendency, air quotes. If there's like a more concerning one, and I was actually going to ask you about this, Sarah, if there's a like a bad cultic leftist tendency, because I don't get a chance to ask anyone about this except maybe a friend in a Discord where we kind of compare notes. You ever heard of Black Hammer, Sarah?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you, I'm pretty sure you could always ask Eliza, because.
Oh, Lord.
Well, we brought you here. We brought you here to answer these questions specifically. Yeah. Well, these,
and I'm here. But yeah, I mean, you. Yeah, no, you know.
Okay. Leftists aren't perfect.
Fair enough.
Let me speak on behalf of our audience for a minute here. We need to provide a little bit more context for the stuff that we're talking about, because this is fringe knowledge. So let's talk about who Black Hammer is.
I am trying to imagine a world in which Black Hammer is fringe knowledge.
All right. Black Hammer is and isn't fringe. Basically, if you're a true Anon listener, that podcast, they have talked about it back and forth. But like, basically, if you know about Black Hammer, your first introduction might have been the Fuck Anne Frank trending hashtag on Twitter.
Right.
Black Hammer is a pretty active air quotes left. I mean, let's not air quotes left it. It is a leftist org, but has a sort of specific anti-imperialist crank bent that hews towards anti-Semitism, but not only that, cultic activity from a deeply in prior incarnation sort of transphobic leader that now identifies as transphobic and does weird cryptic streams, whereupon two people in an apartment are wielding baseball bats.
Yeah, I will say, like, anecdotally, because I'm probably the least familiar, but I did learn about Black Hammer somewhat recently. I was like, oh, it's this, you know, some friend talked about it and mentioned, like, Black Hammer, and I was like, oh, what's that? Sounds like a fairly lefty org. And then within about 2 minutes of looking at it, I went, oh, this is just this one guy. It's just him. It's not just the one guy now. Well, like, I don't mean, like, in terms of the org. I mean, like, the org perception is just about him. It's not about leftism. It's not about getting anything done. It's so blatantly about serving that guy's interest, Ghazi, that, yeah, it was just like, it made me feel bad. Like, I felt like, clearly, I'm not going to fall for it. But, like, it was so, if you just watch, like, one of their propaganda videos, you're just like, wow, he is scamming hard.
Yeah, yeah. Not only that, Ghazi, well, they identify as trans now. I'm going to invoke the Kathy Brennan rule and just misgender them and call them he.
I'll explain
the Kathy Brennan rule to you. Sure. All of the listeners.
I miss what you said about that, to be clear. But I thought you said they were openly transphobic. I did not. I misheard that.
You can they, them. I won't.
Yeah.
But yes, Kathy Brennan rule. I'm doing the cross in the air. But yeah, Ghazi, his whole deal is that, the arguments comport to sort of fit where Black Hammer will move forward. Basically, X amount of money that could be put on the table. Ghazi has openly talked about, if Black Hammer members want to start OnlyFans and sort of feed that into the machine, they can. And not only can they, but they are encouraged to, which, you know, I have some feelings about how people talk about
blurry fishing.
When people talk about sex trafficking, I'm not going to get into a big rant about it, but sometimes what they're just talking about is wanting to get rid of all porn from the internet.
Well, we saw this in Seattle during Chaz, which I will not refer to as CHOP because the people who petitioned that it be referred to as CHOP were working with the police. We should probably do a whole episode on Chaz, actually, at some point.
It's been a year and change.
I was there. Anyway,
You two are actually very good sources. Jake lived next to that shit, and Eliza was physically adjacent to that shit. But yes,
I was literally there. Mm-hmm. We had the exact same type of guy, and his name is Raz. Raz Simone was the local cult leader at Chaz, and he rolled up with, I don't know exactly what type of rifle they were. I think it was AKs. And
It's going to be an AR-15 or an AK.
He handed them out to underaged kids who were there in the zone, filmed, I think, music videos, went live on Instagram constantly. And a few people, after he showed up, people were like, wait, I know this guy. And there was some local chatter about him, and then it came out that he was in fact running a sex cult, same thing, flirty fishing. He was trafficking women, he was using them to get others into the cult. He apparently was doing shit like branding them. There was haircutting stuff. It's all out there, and because this is Seattle and it's not actually a metropolitan area, no matter how much we object, this stuff never really made it outside of the sort of protest in group news, and it really should, because it was a big story and all of this stuff was 100% verifiable, but I could not get anybody to fucking listen to me.
I remember seeing one of two cult experiences
I had at Chaz. So there was like a lot of operators working in that just very concentrated little leftist bubble, getting as much as they could out of it.
Yeah, Go ahead. No, you're good. I was just saying, my small impression when I was like in Chaz and walking around, it was that very same thing. I definitely didn't go as deep into the Roz, but I saw that guy. And you can, you know, just look at it for like 5 seconds and go, okay, well, he's here because he wants people to follow him. Like, not that subtle, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And, you know, there's people like that who are maybe going to jump on and be opportunistic who aren't cult leaders, but that's too good of a ground to not attract other the people that are going to use that for more nefarious means.
Jake, if I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times, clout chasing is eternal. It knows no ideology.
I guess, you know? Listen, you're not wrong.
Yeah, no.
Jim Jones was a hell of a clout chaser, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's one, the thrill of the act. We have so many few thrilling outcomes in the modern era, especially, you know, not to get all air quotes third worldist, but if you think of the Imperial Core, as some refer to it, we think of risk as possibly getting canceled or et cetera, over maybe something we said. Risk as it relates to political outcomes within the world up to a certain point, I want to say maybe the 80s, but like the last 50 years in the West, and also sort of the tamed world, the massive political outcomes under the veneer of like doing it correct and upright and not having the air of corruption about it. Well, it was achieved through power, the ability to sort of have a martial force leveraged against power, and it's supported by money and a mass popular movement. Maybe not necessarily Western or American populism, but people are out in the streets. They are out for blood. These are groups of people that are not just, you know, poor, disenfranchised, but like the scariest kind of enemy. Like the people that show up in the streets that have no fucking shoes to wear. Like a group of people without shoes coming towards you in unison are people ready to end your life, no matter the experience throughout the world. Like hundreds of people not wearing shoes are coming for blood. That's the story of history.
It's legal.
It's legal, folks.
It's legal. Barefoot is legal.
Barefoot is legal. But yeah, Sarah, in terms of like, yeah, what's most interesting about you and why I'm super bothered about maybe a lot of left thinkers sort of abandoning sort of talking out your process and your rationale for why you want to engage with people and get people out of violence and extremist thoughts. Like they saw the outcome of Bernie and shit. And like, for me, that's where a lot of them, I felt anyway, personally, that like they stopped reaching out to you or this or that. And it's very unfortunate because like, yeah, you know, your connection to a common shared humanity where, yeah, you reached out to those right wingers that were like legitimately scared. Do you feel like it's like people's sort of unwillingness to engage with the fact that you hang out with or like talk out shit with these sort of right wing thinkers or ideologues or whatever, what have you? Like, I'm not trying to litigate interpersonal conflict. I'm talking about the tendencies that people have when it comes to think about talking to people with very different political beliefs, like antithetical beliefs. These are people where it's like, yeah, no, irreconcilable differences. I don't fuck with that kind of person.
People that do not go across the aisle, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your question?
Yeah, it was a little.
No. What I was saying was like, what if you had to pin down, like, why? No.
I'll answer, actually.
Yeah.
There are people, and especially people in activist circles, and people who literally put like their fucking lives on the line to protect their communities from like actual fucking neo-Nazis, terrorists. Okay, and those people, some of those people, like, they're not going to feel comfortable with me in their spaces. Mm. And the thing is, I understand. Like, I do. You know, earlier when I was trying to tell you that, like, you know, the alt-right and fucking disinfo people. I was like, yeah, so I ended up in a Posobiec fucking troll room and got mad at these assholes, and they were telling me they were going to piss in the populist well over on the left side. See, I can just, like, tell you guys that, but that sort of thing makes some people very uncomfortable, and understandably so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because, like, he's wearing a suit, but he's still, like, a fucking neo-Nazi at the end of the day, right?
Absolutely.
Someone naive like me with very unstable emotions at times. Like, you say I'm smart, but, like, you could be the smartest person in the world, but if, like, if you ain't got your shit together personally and emotionally, you're going to end up taking a bunch of risks you should never take. And you might fucking end up thinking, like, well, if I stay in this bad situation I never should have walked into long enough, maybe I can save someone. Okay, but, like, you don't. So mm-hmm. you start lying to yourself. And if that's your decision-making, if you let yourself get into that sort of situation, no, you probably shouldn't be, you know.
Doing that.
Yeah, no. or at least you shouldn't. I understand. When it comes to the organizing stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
It's not like everyone abandoned me, but, like, yeah, no, and that's part of it. It was never about reaching across the aisle to see if, like, you know, me and these other people, these, like, Groypers or whatever, could get along. It was about, like, can we somehow convince fucking Gorka on his mm-hmm. fucking shitwave show today to just say that QAnon is cultic and that you should check on your meemaws and pep-peps because this isn't what Trump wants? Can we try to get that
right.
messaging out to that side from people they trust?
Yeah,
just a bare minimum is what I'm hearing. Like, just I totally get what you mean now, I think, where it's like, you don't need to save everyone. You just need to cleave a line between these things.
I'm dialed into your wavelength. I know exactly what you're talking about because it transcends some ideological lines. It's pursuits that people, like, don't go to because they think it's a platitude. Yeah.
Other people, sorry, go on. That's the thing. If I'm talking to a neo-Nazi, I'm not talking to a neo-Nazi because I like that neo-Nazi and I think that we can be friends and I think we can form a fucking coalition.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
You know?
It's very obvious to us, I guess, on the show. But yeah, as you said, Eliza.
It's not why you show up. During Occupy, I got shit constantly because we were there. We had been through the medic training. We had been trained by someone from the Black Rose Collective in PDX, which is a street medic. And medics at riots, even if they're Antifa, even if they're Black Bloc, they treat everybody, right? You show up, you do your fucking job, and when you are in medic gear, when you are wearing the Red Cross or whatever, you don't fight. You're a non-combatant. The cops don't care. They will target you specifically. Yeah. So we have to wear protective equipment. We have to wear helmets at the very least, because that's how you fucking die at a riot, as a cop shoots you in the head with a less than lethal round. Okay, so we roll up to Occupy and there's millions of liberals and us. We're Black Bloc. We're wearing the helmets. We're wearing, you know, it's like bare minimum athletic equipment because we know what will happen if we don't. We got just shat on by liberals every fucking time we showed up. Why are you escalating the conflict? Why are you making the police afraid of us? Why are you causing this riot when it's supposed to just be a peaceful protest? This is your fault for showing up with a fucking helmet. This happened to me all the time. And it was just kind of this process of, like, ignoring these people and being like, I don't really know what to talk to you about. And then we would see the pigs were putting on their masks or getting their shit together or something. And we knew the signs because we had already spent 30 hours doing this. And we would actually try to warn people. We'd say, you need to get your baby out of here because they are about to shoot tear gas. They don't give a shit if your kid has asthma and they kill it. You need to leave. You need to get your dog and your baby and your mom and leave this area. Go two blocks away. This was downtown Oakland. And I used to get people going like, oh, you know, big deal. You know, I'm not going to fucking listen to you. You're a troublemaker. You're a false flag op because you're here with a helmet or whatever. And I'd be like, okay, see you in five. Sure enough, 5 minutes later, tear gas going off, screaming, running. It's exact. People act the way they do in movies during panic situations. It was so weird. I didn't understand this about, you know, mass panic situations. I thought that all the screaming and stuff was theatrics. And I'll say something else about that later. But no, it turns out that when explosions happen, people do in fact scream and run exactly the way they do in movies. And so I would find the same fucking people wandering around in a tear gas cloud and have to sometimes physically pick them up off the ground, take them to safety, wash out their eyes. We would get people coming out of restaurants that were just in downtown Oakland that the cops had shot tear gas into for fun, because that's what they do. And I would literally be washing tear gas out of somebody's face with liquid antacid and water. And they'd be saying, why did they shoot us? Why did they shoot us? I don't understand this. Why did they shoot us? And I would see the radicalization happen in real time, because you would get a liberal in your lap covered in, you know, tear gas, and you would pick up a leftist off the ground afterwards and, you know, tell them how to get to the BART train.
I mean, I will say this. I get what you're saying, like, i.e. that line of thinking. There is something that, like, I did want to kind of tie towards Sarah's rationale, though, which is, like, I think beyond our ability to map, like, certain ideologies or whatever, though, like, there is a very core beyond ideology thought process there, though, Eliza, because you're going to, as you said, treat everyone. And it is as simple as being, like, on the side of life versus being on the side of death. That exactly. I think is, like, one of those core tenets where if you're moored to your humanity. See, and they do this rhetorically. There is a rhetorical answer, like, for a certain strain of pro-death person, I would almost sort of say, because it's almost further than being far right. I think of the thing where, like, people in policy decisions say we need a religious exemption for treating certain types of people. If you're a paramedic or this or that person, because people actually die when this happens. Like, you don't realize it, but, like, those orders that states put in where it's like, okay, yeah, if I don't want to treat a faggot, I won't. Like, there was a death, like, I want to say in the South recently, where this trans woman got shot 3 times. There's a paramedic that fucking turned them down and they died bleeding in the street. That shit happens not just here. It happens in Turkey. It happens in fucking Europe. They can do that shit rhetorically all over the place. And they tie it to policy.
And that's not fucking medical ethics. That's breaking your oath. I'm not bound by a medical ethics oath, obviously, because I'm not an actual doctor. I'm just some guy
who went to
a first aid class. But
someone comes in front of you, you don't ask, oh, hey, you have your eye got fucking torn in half by a rubber bullet. Oh, hey, are you a racist or not? No.
And I saw a lot. I have seen medics over and over treat some idiot, you know, who, like, runs into a crowd and starts, you know, handing out punches or something and gets put on the ground. It's the medics that show up and are like, okay, enough. I'm going to treat this guy. Everybody go home. Something that we were told in street medic first aid training was this: it is illegal to treat somebody against their will. You can't, and unethical. You can't, you know, force somebody to get medical treatment, but once they pass out from blood loss, that's fair game. So we were told specifically, if you've got a patient who is irascible, panicking, you know, injured, whatever, is refusing treatment because you're Antifa or whatever, just wait, just give them time. They'll go down and then you can treat. We were told that a lot. I forget what was I gonna
you were remarking on a thing you would talk to Sarah about later, where you were referring to, I guess, your time doing all of this and the people you encountered, I believe, in street medic work. Because there was a specific it was about Chaz Chop specifically.
Oh,
we
God.
Not a whole episode about this fucking shit, but
it is a whole episode, yeah. But the two people who I can't remember her real name. Everyone just called her Boots because she wore these particular boots to every protest. And then another guy, David something.
They're not Doc Martens, folks. These are actually moon boots. There were several rubber traps.
They were like
out of purple.
Steve Madden's dupe.
Purple and green.
Soda brand, you know, $15 from Payless or whatever. Yeah, they were that.
This bitch had Evangelion boots.
It was
unit one.
Hey, but that's fucking awesome.
Yeah, those boots way too cool. No, she did not have Evangelion boots. Michelle's making that up. I was there. They were just like fucking, what do you call them? They weren't Tim's, but they were like brown Doc Martens or whatever.
That's what's up.
That wasn't what I was going to actually save that for. We should do a Chaz episode.
Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah, I think that's the whole thing.
My point about the street medicing thing and the reason why I am almost always in there as a medic and not as anything else is, number one, you've always got a job to do and your role is very clear cut, which is sometimes difficult to tell in a protest, both in the larger movement and in the microcosm of the riot that you are in. Like, what am I supposed to be doing right now? If you're a medic, you always know what you're doing. And I got to say this, it's exactly like Team Fortress 2. If you're a medic, you've always got a job.
Fuck me. Oh my God.
You follow around the combatants. And I'll tell you another thing. When people go down, they yell for medic.
Oh my God.
And you're right there. I understood after doing all this why the Army uses first person shooters to train people for combat. It was pretty impressive that me and my gamer street medic friends were not the ones panicking and running around. We instinctively took cover behind dumpsters, but all of us knew exactly what we were doing because we had hundreds of hours of training in a virtual environment. That was pretty scary. But in doing the work that I'm not saying that Sarah and I do the same work, but we, I think, have had some overlap in the work that we do in the sense of trying to educate, de-radicalize and treat. It's about the material conditions. I'm always saying this, and I've said this, you know, 10 times on this podcast alone. It's about the material conditions. So people need protection from tear gas. I raised money. I bought 100 gas masks and passed them out to Seattle protesters. You know, they've still got it. I sent 50 of them to the Medic Collective that is around here. I can't remember their name, but they're an indigenous org. So that, if you are in any sort of work and you're feeling just like fucking hopeless and that you haven't done anything, you haven't de-radicalized anyone, or you haven't saved enough people, the material conditions are that somebody didn't have tear gas protection and now they do, you know, or somebody didn't know about QAnon and now they do. And they send that Facebook message to their grandma or something. That's what I did when I heard about QAnon. I'm like, shit, I got to check up on my parents. And I messaged them. I'm like, hey, do you hear about this QAnon thing? Let me tell you about it. Let me give you that. It's an inoculation, right?
Never been more convenient to have one living parent who never uses computers, to be honest with you. That's one thing I've had luckily been able to avoid.
To that, I would say, yeah, no, I hear what you're saying there, but I also sort of hew towards one thing that Sarah said earlier, which is if you could repeat that, where it was like accepting there's some shit you're not going to be able to change, or.
Yeah,
that there's no answer.
Oh, yes.
Like, what's the answer to this? What's, you know, like where would you start trying to give someone an answer to all of this QAnon shit or this cult shit or this mass radicalization or weaponized disinformation? And it's like, I'm not Buddhist, but mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not Buddhist kind of. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've been around so goddamn long that there are some things we're just not going to know. And we're just going to have to find a way to be cool with that while we're here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not going to find out, like, you know, actually why we are here or who or what put us here or any of that shit. And we're just going to have to be okay with that.
I don't think it's mysterious. It's not mysterious to me at all. This is just human behavior. This is what people do. Why do people join cults? Why do people get involved with abusive partners? The answers to both of those questions are exactly the same. And I wanted to actually touch on that there isn't a lot of overlap in discourse of abuse with the discourse of cults, and there really should be, because they are, sure.
Sexual coercion is a big part of a lot of them.
I'm not qualified to say that they are exactly the same, but they are exactly the same.
I know enough people who are qualified that'll say they're the same thing.
They're the same.
Mm. We can put qualified in air quotes if you want, because some of them have ended up disappointing me. Greatly. But anyway.
Oh yeah, no. I was thinking, like, I was like looking at one thing on my Lock Twitter, and it's like there's this one cult dude that you were like really, he's got some insightful shit to say, but I was like, look, Yeah. You know, I was like looking at one of his things. He's like one of these guys that like quite literally believes that those like trans sissy hypno videos will actually turn trans sissy. It's like, goddamn, dude.
Woo. And he doubled down, and he doubled down with the Rowling letter and started talking about listening to the detransitioners. And I'm like, you wouldn't even listen to me when I pointed out a fucking satanic neo-Nazi cult.
Yeah.
That goes in two places. And they see these young queer people or potentially trans people or whatever. They do not see them as human. Mm-hmm. So they get them to do these things, and they just do it because they think it's funny. Because they want to, like, because it's their prey. They do not see these people as human. And it's like, yeah, sure, if we could have some awareness about this, it's not a widespread phenomenon. We're not going to, like, I'm not trying to restart a gay panic or anything.
Yeah, no, and then,
you know, or
5 minutes, minutes later, then where do we end up? And it's interesting.
He wouldn't even listen to me about that. I pointed to, like, one of the only actual valid examples.
We have
something that could be a coordinated effort, and it's not trans people being perverts like these gender crit assholes are talking about. It's like fucking neo-Nazis who don't see these people as human playing with them for fun. And he would not listen. And then all of a sudden, like, well, we got to listen to the detransitioners. What the hell? And then the anti-cult lawyer who fought Ulm for decades and founded the Japan Society for Cult Prevention and Recovery, he's fucking transphobe now, too. That's his thing in Japan. So I'm like,
I mean,
man,
but even within the people you've known in the past, I was just curious as to how you would characterize that disappointment. But it's very clear now after you've spoken.
But these people were supposed to be the ones who knew better. You know, they were actually supposed to look out for people. And then, like, what did they do? They signed up with like this reactionary bullshit, and they're not actually trying to protect people from cults.
Because the thing is, let's go beyond maybe our personal stakes. I want less bad policy, physical violence, and et cetera against trans people specifically, not because I am a trans person, but I would say the same thing about like, as we talked about in the past on the pod, like Palestinian people or whatever, that like, maybe there's X amount of ultra strain of like their theology where, it leans towards a sort of right authoritarian bent, like, or it doesn't. And there's just like this moderate position there where they're like deeply anti-LGBT, but like, I should want those people to have a better life and not live at the absolute mercy of Israel, because like, not because I have skin in the game or the X amount of people might hate me, but because no one should live in open air fucking concentration camps. No one should live through the miseries that these people have been forced to have. Like God, like IDF dudes, like have dogs rape children in fucking Palestine. Like these are fucking awful people, the soldiers that do this shit. Like, I should not be so caught up in identity that I can't think of a common thread of humanity between someone like that's very different than me and going through a different situation that I can't empathize with our common shared humanity. And that's the thing about a lot of these guys that fall for this crank transphobia shit. It's easier to unmoor yourself from your humanity if you're made to easily make arguments against why a specific group of people cannot exist. Like we have a lot to teach one another. And that can be the common through line that links difference in lived experience, but we're able to say to one another, I know what it's like to be an air quotes existential threat to deeply reactionary and evil people. And like, that's kind of why I again think like a lot of your ability to reach out to very different people is very important to me. And I think it should be important to more people And like, yeah, how you just reach out to people is a good impulse. And I know it's difficult for a lot of people to like get that, but I'll be the first person to tell you, like, it's a lot more complicated than just like, I want my side to like have a better life. It's like, no, if I want to live a better life, I'm a part of this society and I live with other people and I don't want it to just be good for me. I want it to be good for them. And like, yeah, that's what I think is dope and good about your work. Sarah, we've been kind of going for quite a bit tonight. And I appreciate everyone. And this has been like one of the best episodes we've ever done. But like, if anyone wants to see the work you've done and also like your Patreon now, because your Patreon is a very new thing you've just started doing recently. Like, where can we see all of that shit at?
I guess you can find it in my Twitter bio. I honestly, I don't really know what I'm going to do going forward because jumping in the pits, And trying to do interventions myself, like, that's just,
you
got to know your limitations, you know?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Burnout is real.
I have told you this before, but you need to start putting up material somewhere where people can actually refer to it.
Yeah.
Every time I try, I have a panic attack. I look at what I've tried to write. I have an actual panic attack. I think about how, like, what degree do I have? Look at all these other people who are like better than me and could
bitch,
do it better than me.
I dropped out of art school 3 times.
I was about to say.
Three times.
This is good.
We
don't review degrees here.
For everyone, this is going
to
be
stop wiping your Twitter so I can actually retweet things from you that can be referred to later.
This is going to be
absolutely. I was drunk.
This is absolutely going to be access culture here. But like, I know people in publishing. If you need like a fucking guy, I can get you a guy if you need help with website shit.
Are you kidding me? The connections
like
that we
know,
have between us?
Yeah, no. If you'd need someone to just take some of this shit out of your fucking brain inventory, we know dudes. We can, there's dude type interventions we can have occur.
Right now, I don't feel comfortable like trying to push any of my own projects forward. I don't. I want to help others. And I've been doing that behind the scenes, and sometimes it pays, sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised at the experts out there who make more than any of us combined will probably see, like, in the next, you know, few years or so.
I'm not surprised at that. Also, you're not pushing your own projects forward. This is something that people have been asking you for a long time.
Yeah.
Some of people accuse me of doing and also, like, trying to, you know, just be here for self-promotion and trying to be an influencer or mad that I'm not on popular podcasts. I'm like, I'll just stop people from shooting up synagogues. Like, this is my...
No.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll speak as like this from the civilian perspective, so to speak, because I started following you on Twitter specifically because of Eliza's retweeting of you several years ago. And the reason I clicked the follow button was because I went, oh, here's someone who's giving me a route to information that I otherwise wouldn't really have and who seems to be approaching it from an angle that, goddamn, I wish more people would, frankly. Yep. And I didn't know anything about you. I didn't know anything about, you know, like what your degrees or lack thereof. But what I kind of had was essentially an endorsement by view of Eliza on Twitter's retweeting and putting that into my feed then. And then a resonance with what you were saying. So I think that, you know, it does exist out there. I'm just a guy who thought what you had to tweet about was pretty cool. And then also when I followed you was like, oh, she's a fucking nerd. I get it. Like, I'm also a fucking nerd. Like, got all the good, the good references and the funny jokes.
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah. Now,
but that is very much like, I think that, you know, panic attacks and whatever, how you're feeling aside there, I'm a guy out there who would read that stuff. And I think there's more than one, like, for sure.
Yeah.
Part of the work that we do when we confront this kind of shit, when we fight in this ideological and material fight, is taking that risk, you know, and having the panic attack at 2 o'clock in the morning and going, oh my God, what if people think I'm an imposter? What if people think I'm an asshole and they send me a non-hate? You know, what if someone comes to my house with a gun? Like, that's honestly,
yeah, that's
that is
the thing. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Cameras and motion lights. Yes.
It is one of the reasons, one of the many, many reasons that I don't have dependents. I don't have a real job. I'm undoxable. I'm already naked on the internet. You can't do anything to me. I'm untouchable. And it
absolutely
has, it gives me complete fucking freedom. I can do and say whatever I want and no one else is going to suffer for it. I'm completely alone, basically, specifically so that I could take these kinds of risks. It's part of the work. And having made those sacrifices, it would be a waste of that sacrifice for me not to take those risks. So that's what I think. That's my motivational speech. I've been bugging you about this for years. So you already know my position on it. But there is not just a desire, but a need. You are the only person who is doing what you are doing, the way that you are doing it, who knows the stuff that you know. And you've said it on here. You've said it on this podcast many different times. You're disappointed in the other people who are trying to do the same kind of work that you're doing because they fucked up. And a lot of them don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Even the ones that you are still friends with, a lot of them don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And I won't name names. But
I will. I'm a piece of shit. Yeah, no.
Most shall.
No. This is philosophically who the fuck I am, but I'm not going to. See it as just you gotta tease it out, folks.
That's what I think. And you know, that's my role on the podcast. That's my role in the larger social circles. I'm the person who yells at you when I feel that you're not doing what you want to be doing. So take it or leave it.
Everyone, no, a showrunner and now because Jake decided to mosey on in.
It okay, is all right. Listen, everybody gets one. You literally,
I'm
not going to say,
honey,
you
I
had a
literally,
family emergency, and I,
honey, I literally but, love you. You have been so good as a producer.
No, yeah. Honestly, thank everyone's you for getting that done. I'm sorry, I wasn't here at the beginning. Thanks for rolling with stuff.
I've got to be the sheriff. Everyone's going to stop sucking Sarah's dick right now.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
I know attention and praise makes you uncomfortable. It's one of the things that makes you good at your job is that, you know, you do not do it for the clout. So I know exactly what you're going through.
The clout funnel is shuttered. What I was going to say was, yeah, in terms.
Don't fucking praise me. I'll kill you. Yeah.
In terms of your output, and all right, if you don't feel cool with self-promotion, like what's a Twitter people can reach you at? What's a Patreon that people can subscribe to and kind of maybe ask you or make comments about what they'd like to see from you in the future? Like hit us up with some links.
Just scream at me on Twitter. Like that's where I live right now.
Can't
and we'll include that.
Wanted to ask Nezumi Ningen. That's I'm far from knowing, but I used to study Japanese. That's what is Ningen? Because I know Nezumi's mouse.
Mm-hmm. Ningen can be like a human or humanity.
Okay. Okay.
People.
Okay. It's a comic reference. Thanks.
No.
I think you told a story.
Tell us what it's from, Sarah.
Oh, yes. Uh-oh.
Let's go.
Hold on 1 second. Let me finish this beer.
Hey.
Chug.
Okay, so there was this Japanese serial killer. His name was Tsutomu Miyazaki. And he was the first serial killer of his type in Japan. He killed a bunch of little girls, and I'm not going to get into the details because the details are actually really gross, and I hate that shit. Okay, but society just absolutely lost its shit. And they blamed cartoons. And horror movies and nudie comics instead of like blaming like the legal child pornography that he drifted to because everything else was censored, or you know, just instead of like banning the child exploitative materials and then all of a sudden the otaku were dangerous. But anyway, he was a piece of shit, and when he was finally on trial, he started malingering on the stand, and he made up this bullshit about how like I was just like hanging out and chilling, and I guess the girl was there, but then these rat people came from the sky and they did the bad thing.
Okay.
And he said it was because my dead grandpa wanted it. But if you go search Tsutomu Miyazaki, if you go to the Wikipedia page, or if you like you go watch shitty YouTube documentaries, they all say he was the rat man. He called himself the rat man and had an alter ego, and I'm like, okay. That's not what he said.
No, it was a Son of Sam Harvey situation.
That's what I thought of.
Folks, this
they,
is because the
they know that it could be plural. They went with the singular and made up their own bullshit.
This is that too. Right, because of the language. Yeah.
This is Shin rat mode, folks. This is Shin rat mode, easily.
It's a major case that I know.
I've never like bothered to Google it, you know, and whatever, but like I've just always known half of your Twitter username and I did not know what Ningen was.
Absolutely. I'm happy that adults recorded that conversation about that specific name.
Guys, you don't understand. When I went to the cult conference, because we were going to, Hanrahan and I were going to get the JSCPR to like sign off on doing like an OM documentary. Hmm. And I went to go meet with the Japanese anti-OM lawyers and stuff at the cult convention. And they happened to like execute Asahara and like 7 people while we were there at the convention. So hell broke loose. Mm-hmm. But one of the lawyers there was an otaku lawyer, and he actually has like this letter from Satoru Miyazaki being like, hey, will you pick up my case? I want a retrial. And dude was like, no, fuck you. You like suck. So,
oh my God.
That's
some insider. That's just, I mean, imagine getting a letter from him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, please. It was just for the clout. I didn't. No.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I appreciate you coming on. And this was a great interview. It was a great discussion. Thank my producer, Jake, for
being fucking late.
Being a piece of shit.
I don't know what you did to raise your volume there, but I'm just going to say that. You had the intimidation. That was effective.
Oh, I spent most of my childhood in theater training, so you know, I project from the diaphragm when I want to make a point.
That's
actually
it.
A very good skill to have in the middle of a riot.
Yeah.
If you need to yell at somebody, you better have the fucking theater training.
You bring it from the stomach and you bring it up. Yeah, no. Yeah. Eliza just lives in demon mode, Jake. Goddamn.
We could all learn a lesson.
We just talk about demon mode, but Eliza lives there. She lives in the zone all of the time. And I appreciate all of you, our listeners, coming to hang out with us in the zone all of the time. We love you. Here's a Jay Dilla song that's going to play as our outro.